Support for WPR comes from The Alliance, committed to being an objective partner for over 425 employers and their brokers, providing self-funded employers with data to manage their health plans. The-Alliance.org.
So happy to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here. We're talking invasive species now, right, with our two guests. Governor Doyle is recognized this month as Invasive Species Awareness Month. It's a project of the Wisconsin Council on Invasive Species, sponsored by the Wisconsin Environmental Education Board, the Invasive Plants Association, and Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. And I'll tell you what, there's many agencies, as well, other agencies as well, that are cooperating. Nonprofits, private businesses, citizen volunteers. There's a whole host of people working on getting rid of those invasive species, including our two guests today, Jerry Dowell, professor emeritus and weed scientist at UW-Madison in the agronomy department. He's president of the Invasive Plants Association of Wisconsin. Jerry, welcome back. Nice to have you with us.
Thank you, Larry. Good to be here.
Tom Booz is an invasive plants coordinator, with the Forestry Division of the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources, a board member of the Invasive Plants Association of Wisconsin. And Tom, welcome to you. Thanks for being with us. Appreciate it very much.
Thank you, Larry.
Tell you what, we've got lots of things to talk about there. I know there are, 75 different events that are scheduled across Wisconsin, Jerry, that to kind of highlight some of this?
Correct. And the Invasive Species Awareness or Council has organized a group called ISAM that focuses on this June Invasive Species Awareness Month. And the website lists all 75. I think we're actually up to 80 now, aren't we, Tom?
Yep.
80 different events around the state. Some have happened already, but obviously it's June 13th. More than half are yet to happen.
Sure.
So people can find out what's going on. And the website is organized very well, chronologically as well as geographically. If you're in a, obviously you'd be most interested in events near you, so you can check it out by county and by date and so forth.
And I tell you what, we have, we go to what? invasivespecies.wi.gov. Is that the place to go?
That's correct.
Correct.
And Tom, let's first define invasive species before we go any further. It's quite like a weed, isn't it, in a way?
Yeah, in a way.
Yeah.
There's a lot of definitions, so I'm going to be true to the organization and define it as we have for our survey that we conducted several years ago. It is defined as non-indigenous species or strains that become established in natural plant communities and wild areas and replace native vegetation.
Yeah. Why are they so successful in spreading and kind of crowding out our native species?
If we knew all of the answers to that question, right, we'd be better at dealing with them probably. But clearly, an invasive species, by most definitions, didn't originate here. So it came from a different continent, most likely, and the plant showed up without its natural enemies. And that's often the starting point for a biological control initiative. You go back to the region where the plant came from, find out what bugs or diseases were suppressing it and keeping it in balance there, and do a lot of testing if we're going to go the biological route of introducing a foreign organism to attack a foreign plant. But that's part of the reason. And just inherently, Mother Nature has given some plants great seed productivity, great winter hardiness, spreading roots in some cases. They have their own adaptations as to why they're so persistent and invasive.
Yeah. Well, I tell you what, I haven't even given the number here, I don't think. And we already have several callers online, but let me give the number if you'd like to join in. We're not dealing with the aquatics so much. We're actually doing that next week on the program. So if you have questions about aquatics, you might save those for next week, although we can probably take a stab at one or two. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. Or if you're in Madison, reach us at 263-1890, 263-1890. Give us a call. And Greg in Green Bay, I believe you are up. Greg, thanks for calling. Greg, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, go ahead.
Sorry, when you mentioned aquatics, I was thinking I have an aquatic question, but I guess if you don't mind taking a stab, maybe.
All right, we'll take a stab. What have you got?
We've got some lake property up in south central Wisconsin, right on the Wisconsin border, a little lake called Lake Lainford that has been invaded by Eurasian milfoil, and I was hoping your guests could maybe talk about it a little bit and give me some idea of prognosis for a lake that has that. There's a lake association that is working with the DNR and trying to contain it, and they put buoys up and try not to disturb the areas where it's broken out. But I would assume there's some historical, historical things that happen with planting bases like this. So I guess I'll just be interested to hear what they have to say.
Yeah. And I think we'll turn to Tom Boozum. Tom, it's probably not your area, and I know you've got a colleague who's going to be with us next week to talk about it, but do you want to take a little stab at it?
I think the most important thing is that you're working with the DNR. I mean, they have aquatic plant managers that are highly trained in that species alone to deal with it. The most important thing with milfoil, I think, is to keep your boats and other equipment that's in the water that's infested clean before you do transport it to other water bodies, because any little filament of the plant will then grow in another water body. So I think you're doing the right thing by working with the DNR and with the Lake Association.
And Greg, I think it's Jim Packard. Is it next week Wednesday? I think next week Wednesday. Yeah, Wednesday we're going to be taking a look at aquatic invasive species. So be sure to tune in next Wednesday, and we'll be doing this. We'll be really going into detail on that. Thanks, Greg, for calling. Jerry in Econo Falls, it's your turn. Hi, Jerry.
Hi, guys. Actually, mine's somewhat aquatic and non-aquatic. It can be either, but it's Phragmites, our giant wheat. I was wondering if the Wisconsin DNR is doing anything to stop the spread of that.
Okay. Tom, I'll go to you for that one, too.
Well, the DNR and many others are involved in control methods for it. It's a difficult rhizobatous plant that spreads easily. There have been, over the years, a few work groups trying to discuss what is going on in the control world of Phragmites. There's another one, a big meeting going on out east in the next couple of weeks. It's difficult, but there are control methods that can be used and will work.
Yeah, I've just noticed it's spreading farther and farther north. You know, it's really heavily around the Bay of Green Bay, and it's just, it seems like it's really spreading out. So I'm hoping we could get it under control here before it gets all over the state.
Yeah, Jerry, any comment from you?
Just not particularly. I have no expertise at all on Phragmites, other than I'm seeing what Jerry's talking about, too, with other species, and I commend him for noticing. And this one's hard not to notice.
Yeah.
It's so big.
Yeah, it's
but
huge.
But early detection is so critical in trying to prevent invasion of something from that initial appearance until it's really taken off and covered a lot more area.
And, you know, some of these plants... you take something like purple loosestrife. We've found we've got an insect that'll feed on purple loosestrife. I see in the paper the other day there's actually some businesses, or at least one business, where they actually raise those bugs to sell to people who have that particular issue. But when you've got some plants like buckthorn or honeysuckle, unfortunately, we don't really have a natural way to rid ourselves of those, Tom. Or am I wrong on that?
I believe they're working on a biocontrol for buckthorn.
Are they? For buckthorn?
I believe so.
Oh, man, would that be great.
I don't think they are for honeysuckle.
Yes, the University of Minnesota is doing some of that biological control work on buckthorn, but it would be years away before we have anything really major. You're right, Larry, about the insect on purple loosestrife. There have been dramatic recoveries of wetland areas by people propagating that. And one of the invasive Crusader Award recipients for 2007 worked intensively on rearing and teaching others how to rear the insects and releasing and then monitoring the impact. So we made real headway there. And the other species where Mother Nature is giving us a free ride on biological control is Multiflora rose. And that was introduced back in the late 40s, primarily in the 50s probably. I grew up in Southwest Illinois, and I can remember when Dad came home with a pickup truckload of those seedlings in the back of the truck, and we planted them around the farm, and many did that in Wisconsin,
well,
too.
Sure.
And Iowa, probably 20 years ago, recognized that some plants of Multiflora rose were sick. They were infected with a viral disease, and it's now called rose rosette disease. And I won't tell the whole story because it's somewhat of a long story, but that disease has spread on its own from Iowa to other states. It's out east as well. And in Wisconsin, we're seeing significant impact of that disease making rose bushes sick and actually killing many. So
is it killing the other ones too?
No, thankfully not. That's part of the rest of the story. There was a plant pathologist in Iowa that almost lost his job because he was working with that, and he learned that there's a mite, a very small mite, aerophyte mite, that transmits the disease. And he was working to move that around on multiflora rose bushes, and the rose clubs of Iowa were extremely nervous. But it, to date, is not known to be a risk to cultivated roses.
Interesting. Well, Lenore and Plover, we'll give you a chance. Hi, Lenore. Thanks for calling.
Hi. I have a weed that I don't know if it's considered invasive, but I sure think it is, and I was wondering what it is. It's kind of viney. It can grow about a foot and a half. It has long, narrow leaves with little tiny white flowers, and if a person goes past it or an animal, it just grabs on. I mean, you can't even pull it out with anything but plastic gloves because it grabs on so much. Do you know what it is?
Yes, you have bed straw.
And, called what?
Bed straw.
Bed straw. Hard to imagine it was ever used for that. But in England and Europe, in England, it's called cleavers. And it is a clinger. If you have pets out there, it's an all-day job to clean the fruits out of pet hair. It is somewhat invasive. It's not on any invasive plant list that I know of. It's a winter annual plant. Excuse me. To the extent that you can pull plants before they go to the fruiting stage, eventually you might get ahead of the seed bank and eliminate it.
All right.
Not invasive, but it sure is a problem. Just that.
Yeah.
Invasive in the sense that it's on the list. And people are encouraged to control it? No. But in your backyard or your land, a few plants could certainly become many plants unless you take action.
What happened. I'm out there a couple hours a day just pulling that stuff.
Yeah.
Okay.
You're doing the right thing.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. And let's go to Paul in Belleville. Hi, Paul. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, thank you. I have a question. We got about an acre of pasture that we're starting to cut. And I have just thousands upon thousands of thistles that are all over the place on the pasture. And I'm just wondering if there's, other than taking Roundup and going to each individual one, if there's something else I could do that maybe is also non-chemical orientated.
Jerry, what do you think?
Yes. Non-chemical with the size of the population you have is going to be a challenge. I'm 90% sure you do not have Canada thistle. Do you know the particular thistle you're dealing with?
I do not.
What does it look like?
Well, when in the pasture that we don't cut, it grows to be about 4 or 5 feet tall. Right. It has the purple flowers on the top of it.
Big purple or half inch, 3/4 inch diameter?
3/4 inch.
Okay, you have plumeless thistle. And why it's called plumeless, I don't know. It obviously has plumes. But it is one of our invasive biennial thistles. And the key to killing any biennial long-term or annual is to prevent seed production. So timely mowing does a lot. And at this point, none of those flowers have pollinated. So you don't even have young seeds forming in those plants. So clipping would help. But that particular thistle and the other one with a bigger flower called musk thistle will regrow after clipping. It won't be 4 feet tall. It'll be 2 feet tall and flower. So you cut it again. It'll be 1 foot tall and flower. It takes at least 3 mowings if we think mowing alone would prevent seed production. I was working with knew of a sheep producer over in the Mineral Point area years ago. He was one of the early adopters of intensive rotational grazing. And because he was out there in smaller paddocks than most people, he took his short-handled hoe and he cut off every one when he saw it just a little below the ground. And that's the other approach you could take. It's more effective than mowing. If you cut off most biennial plants just an inch and a half below the soil surface, they do not resprout. And he did that for a long time. And I talked to him a few years ago, and I said, Peter, how's the war going? He said, what war? And I reminded him of his telling me about his plumeless thistle effort. And he said, oh, that's over. And I said, how long did it take? And he said, 10 years. So that's sort of the ballpark time that we might be looking with to deplete the seed bank of some invasives, at least. Chemically, though, since we're dealing with a biennial plant, the first year it grows only vegetatively. It has basal leaves called a rosette of leaves. And late September, the first half of October in the southern part of Wisconsin, the good old dandelion-killing herbicide 2,4-D is very, very effective. And treating rosettes is if we're going to use an herbicide, treating plants in the rosette stage is strongly preferred, and the fall timing is usually better than a spring application.
Thanks for calling, Paul. Appreciate it very much. Jerry Dahl, Professor Emeritus and Weed Scientist at the UW-Madison Agronomy Department and President of the Invasive Plants Association of Wisconsin, is joined by Tom Booz, Invasive Plants Coordinator in the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources and also a board member in that Invasive Plants Association of Wisconsin. I'm Larry Mueller. Jim Packard, our producer, and you are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're talking invasive species during this Invasive Species Awareness Month in Wisconsin. Next week, we'll tackle the aquatics, but today we're into the non-aquatics with Jerry Dahl of the Invasive Plants Association of Wisconsin. Tom Booz, also of that association, but also in the he's plants coordinator, invasive plants coordinator in the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources Forestry Division. So happy to have them with us. All our lines are filled, but here's the number, 1-800-642-1234, or in Madison at 263-1890. Give us a call. George in Milwaukee, you are next. Hi, George. Thanks for calling.
Hello. How are you?
Great. Thanks for calling.
I have a stand of ornamental bamboo in my backyard, and it keeps getting larger and larger, and some has come up 10, 15 feet away. I'd like to get rid of all of it. What would I do to get rid of it?
Yeah, a lot of people would like to know that.
Yeah, that's worthy of a Nobel Prize if you do figure that out. It may not be that difficult. Do you know if you planted it or someone else?
No, when I bought the house, it was back there.
That's another example of a good intention gone awry. People thought this would make a nice ornamental plant, and it's attractive, and it has somewhat pretty flower clusters. Thankfully, you either have a male plant or a female plant, and in your particular case, I'd guess they're probably all female, and it wouldn't have, and plants don't have perfect flowers. So if there's not a male plant around it, you do not have a seed bank to deal with. But the root on this one is very intimidating, as you say. It can go a long distance from the parent plant. Several years ago, I started a weed garden at the Arlington Research Station, and I had Japanese bamboo, that's its more official common name, in there. And these plants were spaced on 6-foot distances from each other, and in 2 years, this one had gone visiting all its neighbors. So I declared war on it, and here's what I did. When it was about waist high, I chopped it down, and then it regrew, as I'm sure you've done and seen that. And then I carefully applied glyphosate to it, the commercial name that many of you would recognize with that is Roundup, and it's non-selective, and that's why I was careful. I didn't want to kill the grass in between the plants. And then I went out in late September with a shovel and dug up that area, and I thought I would have to do that probably for 2 to 3 years, and I didn't. That almost eradicated it. But my infestation had only been there 3 years. Mm-hmm. But what did I do? Why do I think that's something that teaches us a lesson? Well, I used three strategies. Well, two basically, but I chopped it down mechanically, then I sprayed it, so we had the chemical action, and then I went back with more mechanical action via tillage. And I think it's going to take something that aggressive for you to really get a head start on that, bringing that one back into control.
I've actually tried to dig the roots up, and they are very large.
Impossible to get them all.
It is.
Yeah, I think you need something like glyphosate, which goes from the foliage throughout the underground plant system. And with digging, you would never get as many roots killed as efficiently as you would with a timely glyphosate application.
And what time of the year did you say I should apply the Roundup?
A mistake some make with glyphosate is that they put it on too early. We need to let the leaves fully develop. And for most plants, when we'd be talking to farmers, we'd say wait until they're in the bud stage. At that point, the plant is moving photosynthates from the foliage well into the underground plant parts. And that's what we need for success with glyphosate to kill a perennial plant, movement into that underground portion. So I would wait. I think I would try my strategy. At this point in time, let's chop it down. And when it grows back 3, 3.5 feet tall, then make the chemical application. And then go back and do some tillage if that's practical for you after that.
And good luck, and thank you very much for calling. You know, we're doing a home remodel at our place, and our new flooring is going to be bamboo. Hmm. But I don't think it's the same bamboo.
No. It's a misnomer. The plant has a hollow stem, so it's actually in the Polygonaceae, the buckwheat family, not in the bamboo family at all.
All right. Catherine in Verona, we'll go to you next. Hi, Catherine.
Hi, Larry. Hi, Jerry and Tom. I first of all wanted to say that Wolfgang has had great success with your thistle brew, and I thought maybe you could talk about that later on in the show. But my question has to do with strategies for citizens like me to help in stopping the spread of garlic, mustard, and other invasives due to roadway mowing. I'm really frustrated by the observation, you know, those of us that have been managing our forests through the DNR Managed Forest Program, you know, we've been encouraged through grants and through publications to keep the invasives down in our forests, and I've been doing that for 20 years, and really successfully. But these last, I would have to say, 5 to 7 years, I have just seen the marching forward of the garlic mustard up our very narrow little gravel road and out along the main paved road. The school forest is in our neighborhood, and I've watched that garlic mustard has progressed along the roadway of the school forest, and I just don't know how we can stop this and what we can do, you know, not within our own private property, but out there on the roadways, which are not private. How can we, well, first of all, a couple of real clear questions. What is the justification for the roadway mowing, and what is the justification for the scheduling on it? What do you think is the best mowing frequency in the season? And then thirdly, what can we do as citizens at the grassroots level, at the DNR level, or maybe even with the DOT to help change mowing processes?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, thanks, Catherine. And, well, let's see. Tom, you want to start there?
Yeah, I'll take a stab. I'm first going to put in a plug for the Invasive Plants Association listserv. This question was just raised 2-3 weeks ago by IPAW member, and what he did was contacted the town and asked them to change the time that they mow, and you would want to mow the garlic mustard prior to it setting seed, prior to the pod formation, when it's in its flowering stage. And that's probably the first thing to do is, it depends on individual townships as far as how willing they are going to be to alter their mowing schedule. In this case, I believe they got some money and some assistance from the township to help spray it once it was spread.
Hmm. Mm-hmm. So you can, so that's one way to go, because it is a problem. Mowing, if it's mowing at the wrong time, it's just spreading it all over the place.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It sure is. In my case, we live on a very, very narrow little gravel dead end road, and last year the town decided to start mowing beyond their traditional end point. It went about 500 feet farther, and I watched little plants come up, so I marked them with flags and sprayed and pulled. And this year, there, you know, there's more there, and they've gone another 300 feet beyond, and I can just, it's a really great model, because you can watch unopened road become opened road and become a garlic mustard corridor. Okay,
yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, Jerry?
I was just going to comment that your question of how can we get the highway department to adopt a wiser mowing strategy is really a tough nut to crack. We have three weeds that are on the noxious weed law. That's different than invasive weeds, but Canada thistle is one of those, and Canada thistle is not an unusual weed along roadsides. And most towns and counties will respond if people call and point out that infestation. At a minimum, in my view, they should mow it. And I realize their budgets are not what they used to be and not what we would like them to be. There are some very effective herbicides that kill Canada thistle 98% without affecting the grass, and yet you seldom see that done. So that's a tougher one to crack. The other one that spreads by mowing is wild parsnip, and they just do it wrong. They wait until at least July 15th, and the rationale there is to foster bird habitat in these grassy areas along roadsides, and that's well and good. But when we have invasive plants, we shouldn't mow when the seeds are still hanging on the plant. And obviously it's earlier in the case of garlic mustard, but sometimes they just shouldn't be there when they're there. They're making things worse for two reasons. They spread seeds by mowing when they do, and by cutting down the grass, they open up the habitat, so these seeds, when they do fall off, are better able to germinate than if they don't. And a lesser invasive species, I'll just make one more comment here on a different weed that and an illustration of what Tom talked about, too. I live in Springfield Township in Dane County, and at the intersection of two town roads, there was a patch of teasel. And I sent the town weed commissioner some information about teasel. Missouri had just declared it a noxious weed in their state, pointed all that out to him, asked if I could adopt that intersection and deal with it. And he said, all yours. So sometimes when you find a small patch and you jump on it early, and I did that about 4 years ago, and I was there yesterday, and with my tile spade, I cut out 7 rosettes of teasel.
Wow.
And when I started, there were probably 50. So the war is not quite over, but it's going the right way.
Yeah. Hmm. Catherine, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, appreciate the call very much. Well, we'll take some more calls. Again, you can join us at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. Patrick in Juneau County, you are next. Hi, Patrick.
Hi, how are you?
Great, thanks for calling.
Yeah, you bet. I'd like to know how to control multiflora rose over a large area. I mean, I have a 30-acre pasture, and it's just inundated with this stuff. And the last couple of years, we've been grubbing it out. But, man, it comes back just as fast as you get it up.
Jerry?
Yes. 30 acres of multiflora rose tells me you'd be out there a long time grubbing it out. And there are selective herbicides that will save the grass. Do you have some grassy areas left in this? Is it pasture or wooded area?
Yeah, it's pasture.
Okay. The product that I'll recommend here, and I'll give you a website that gives a lot more information, but there's a very selective herbicide that's active at very low rates called Cimarron. You mix 1 ounce of the herbicide in 100 gallon of water, and you go out and spray the foliage. And it's a slow death. It stops protein synthesis within sensitive species, and it's systemic, so it moves from the treated foliage into the underground part of the plant and is very, very effective. I'll refer to the University of Wisconsin Weed Science website. Has a lot of numbers in it for reasons I don't understand. but if you Google University of Wisconsin Weed Science, you will get to our website.
Okay.
And we have a publication there on multiflora rose. And when you get to the extension part of that website, off on the left-hand side is a link called Weed Profiles. And you'll find one on multiflora rose. It tells you a lot more of what you would need to do to manage multiflora rose successfully.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks, Pat. Appreciate it. Ben in Mequon, your turn. Hi, Ben.
Good morning.
Morning.
The issue I'd like to raise with invasives are the neighbors that you have that could care less that they are on their property. I have a neighbor that's got garlic mustard, and I've offered to pull it, to chemically treat it, and this neighbor said, oh, no, I'll take care of the problem, and 2 years ago has done nothing since.
Yeah.
And now I'm taking the route that I'm going to the mayor and my aldermen to try to get ordinances that have some teeth in them that address the issues of invasives that people could care less about.
Yeah. Tom, comment?
Yeah, I think your approach is correct in the sense that municipalities have the ability to add species to the noxious weed law, which then actions by neighbors would need to take place depending on the language within the noxious weed law that municipality has. It's a struggle that a lot of people have. I know everybody that I talk with practically that is battling garlic mustard is trying to convince their neighbors to treat it as well and try to control it. I don't have any other suggestions other than being kind and friendly and discussing the advantages of controlling it now rather than waiting.
You'd think that garlic mustard would be in every municipality's ordinance as a noxious weed. You'd think. But that may not be the case, you're saying.
Yeah, it depends on if it's a problem or not up north. There's not a lot of garlic mustard down here. There is. So I know Sherwood Hills has it on their list, among others.
So it sounds like the best approach would be to get to your municipality and get it on the list, Ben, and then you have some action, or then you have a way to sort of move things along. Well, legally.
I guess another comment I would like to make, too, I guess we should maybe on a state level get our list adjusted.
Yes, and significant effort was made to do that, to, as I describe it, to reinvent the noxious weed law into a noxious weed program. The current law has Canada thistle, leafy spurge, and field bindweed on it. It was written from an agricultural perspective, and it hasn't even helped very much on the agricultural front. And the new effort would be to help people identify weeds that are a threat that aren't really present yet. That would be the ones you would obviously prohibit, and eradication then would make sense. And weeds like garlic mustard would be on a restricted list where clearly people should be legally obligated to take action, especially, as Tom was pointing out, on the boundary areas where it's not in all of Wisconsin yet. So counties that don't have it ought to make it prohibited, and those that do have it would make it restricted and therefore require action. But with our current state budget not having any extra money for anything, the effort to reinvent this program became dormant itself. So there's no action on that front right now.
Unfortunately, the garlic mustard is not dormant.
Unfortunately.
Yeah.
The state DNR and Department of Agriculture and other agencies are working on a classification system in statute, and which is essentially going to be like the noxious weed law. It's just not taking that avenue. It's a separate entity within the natural resources statutes and codes. So things aren't being done. It's just
what does that mean?
It means that there's going to be a series of categories, non-restricted and restricted and things like that. The plants are going to be put into those categories. And I don't want to get into the details too much because it's
still in the planning.
It's in the planning. Yeah.
Oh, okay. All right. But Ben, thank you, and good luck. Go and see your municipality and talk with them some more. Sandy in Madison, it's your turn. Hi, Sandy.
Hi, Larry and Tom and Jerry. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Nobody's mentioned reed canary grass yet, and I'm not sure how many people really know about the problem. I discovered it when I moved to a house we bought on the Yahar River, right in the city between Lake Monona and Lake Mendota. And we have this large patch of it, which, as a member, which we joined of the Friends of the Yahar River Parkway, we've tried several different methods of eliminating it because it has such a large root, and it spreads by rhizomes and and seeds and can travel down the river with the seeds and spread itself that way and spread itself through the grass. But only where you cut it, you can keep it somewhat controlled. But it's growing amongst the rocks, which are the prevent erosion. They're put along the river to prevent erosion, so it's really hard to get in there. I've talked to a lot of people about it. What we've done so far is the different methods. Was a school project. One group covered one patch with just burlap, and of course everything, it just grew right through that. It totally ignored the burlap. And then they dug another patch out, tried to dig it all out, covered it with black plastic, and then covered that with burlap. And that worked a little better, but there's still a lot of weeds growing through. The plastic deteriorates. They said you were supposed to leave it for a couple of years like that. And then we tried, rather than doing all the work of digging it, we did a patch where we just cut it all off right level to the ground so there weren't any stubble to poke through the black plastic, and covered it with black plastic last summer and then stapled some some erosion control cloth over it. We're hoping to put in some native species along the river to beautify the parkway. Everybody that I've talked to just throws up their hands and said, you can try this and you can try that, but we don't know of anything that can really get rid of it. What do you know of the latest things that you can do? And
sure. Now, let's, Tom, you want to take a shot at it? And Jerry, both. Tom?
Well, for one, I'm moving into that neighborhood in like a week. So
help is on the way.
Yeah, help is on the way, I guess. And I've already been asked to join the group working on the river, and I know the Patrick Reed canary grass. There's been, for about a year, year and a half, there's been a reed canary grass work group that's formed to try to come up with treatments and control measures for reed canary grass, and it's a great project. It's most of the experts in the state, and I would suggest using an herbicide called cethoxitin. It's a grass-specific herbicide that will wipe it out with the right application timing and other mechanical means, and we can get into that in much more detail face-to-face. But we have this information on the IPAW website. It's a huge file of information. There's tables that lead into other tables that lead into other tables regarding the types of treatment, how to choose a specific treatment, and then seeds to plant or plant species to put in to compete with the reed canary grass. And this is all on the website, the IPAW website.
And I think if you go to, I just Googled in Invasive Plants Association of Wisconsin, but I think you could just do IPAW of Wisconsin, and it'll pop up on your search engine, whichever one you use, and it'll be probably the first one up. So that's probably a good place to go. You know, Jerry, maybe you could talk a little bit more about the Invasive Plants Association of Wisconsin, what all you're really trying to do.
Well, it's a great group to be with, Larry, and I joined the board only last year myself and quickly found myself as president.
and we thank him.
It's a grassroots group, and I just love the volunteer spirit that there is in the organization. And a lot is happening on the landscape, whether IPAW is part of it or not. People like our callers today and others who won't have a chance to get on live, I'm sure, are really out there. They're aware of what's going on, and they're taking action. They're teaching others. Yesterday, I met with one of my neighbors who didn't know what garlic mustard was. She had a beautiful one growing right in her flower garden. and people are doing that all over the state, and IPAW tries to foster that. We have a speakers bureau that lists people around the state that would be willing to come out and meet with folks and help educate along that line. We offer one of the best books, the best book for Wisconsin, The Invasive Plants of the Upper Midwest, was written by Elizabeth Zarapata, another one of those individuals who saw the problem, took action. She was a biology teacher over in the Milwaukee area, and she's got a wonderful book. It's just rich in content, and you don't go broke buying it. It's $25 for the book. If you're an IPAW member, it's $20. A little plug to join IPAW there. And the organization is only 6 years old. We were born in 2001, and we're doing strategic planning. We're at a point in our history here where we'll be growing more, I'm sure. We have joined up with others every other year to tie into major educational events. The most recent one was in Milwaukee this past December, and the proceedings from that are on the website as well, so people can find the IPAW website and learn a lot about the organization. And we have numerous opportunities for those who are interested to join one of our many committees: education, communication, external relations, plant industries. So I encourage people to check out the website, consider joining IPAW, and giving us a hand.
And don't forget, there's still a lot of events scheduled around the state on invasives, and you can find that on the IPAW website as well.
Yeah, I would just like to add, I mentioned the listserv earlier. There's probably a lot of people that want to ask questions, and that is a means. You join the listserv, you ask questions of all the other people that are on that listserv, and it's a good portion of, you know, experts in certain species across the state and outside of the state, and it's a great way to get your questions answered if you can't get them answered today.
Well, guys, I want to thank you very much for being with us today. The time flew by. We probably could have gone on forever talking about invasive plants, that's for sure. But a real pleasure to have you both. Maybe we can do this again. Okay. Fun to have you back.
That's right. Thanks,
Jerry Dowell, Professor Emeritus and Weed Scientist at the UW-Madison Agronomy Department, President of the Invasive Plants Association of Wisconsin, Tom Booz, Invasive Plants Coordinator in the Forestry Division of the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources, a board member of the IPAW, the Invasive Plants Association of Wisconsin. Coming up, we're going to be talking with Richard Louv about saving our children from nature deficit disorder. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.